From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. President Joe Biden, as candidate, made tackling climate change a key part of his platform, and in his first week in office appears to be staying true to his pledge. He has taken steps for the U.S. to rejoin the Paris Climate Accord, canceled the Keystone XL pipeline, and halted new oil and gas drilling leases on public lands. Biden, as vice president to President Obama, was part of an administration for 8 years that paid lip service to taking on the issue but didn't go far enough. Donald Trump's 4 years in office set the United States back seriously. Will Biden, as president, move fast enough and far enough to stave off catastrophic climate change? Joining me to help answer that question is Natalie Mabane. She is the U.S. Policy Associate Director at 350.org. Welcome to the program, Natalie.
Thank you so much for having me. Very happy to be here today.
So, of course, we can look back on those 8 years when Biden, as vice president, oversaw an administration that talked a good talk, but championed fracking as a transitionary fuel that didn't go far enough, although, of course, there was some progress made, say, through the Environmental Protection Agency and fuel efficiency standards, etc. Do you feel, however, that after 4 years of Trump, and given what Biden has done in his first week, that you're cautiously optimistic about what to expect on climate in the next 4 years?
I can say that I'm definitely optimistic about what to expect on climate from the administration. So far, they've only been in office a short time, and they've already taken so many efforts to really show that they're serious. And I mean, obviously, there's way more to do, right? There's much to do in terms of making up for the last 4 years under the Trump administration. And we can't make up time, of course. But at the same time, we can say we're finally ready to be serious. And so what I've seen so far, just in the past week, it really shows that the Biden administration is taking climate change seriously. And we have even more things we want to see to make sure that he continues on this path.
Let's talk about the moratorium on oil and gas leases, drilling leases on public lands. The federal government, of course, owns many, many millions of acres of land around the nation. And oil and gas companies for years have been able to lease those in order to drill for oil and, of course, have reaped huge profits, have, through their extractive industry, devastated our natural wildlife and our spaces. And they've, had quite a free rein under the Trump administration. What did Biden do on Wednesday of this week in halting leases and, I believe, reviewing previous leases?
I think what he's done is hold true to his campaign promise. He was asked many times, as all the candidates were, if he became president, would he put a hold on leases, new leases being introduced on public lands for fossil fuel development, for oil and gas drilling? And I think it's great that he's shown that, in such a short time that he is serious about that and that he's doing that. It's really important when you think about how long leases last. Leases can be renewed for years and years and years. And so if we're still leasing out our public lands for fossil fuel development, we are essentially saying that we are committed to locking ourselves in to fossil fuels for decades and decades to come. There hasn't been a lease sale in Southern California in the ocean, for offshore drilling since the 80s. Yet we still have oil drilling off the coast of California, which led to the second spill in the area, Santa Barbara area, back in 2015. So it shows that it's not enough to just stop issuing new leases. We also have to deal with the current leases that fossil fuel companies have. But the first step, at least, is to not sell any more leases for fossil fuel development in our country.
Can the Biden administration actually end current leases? Can they back out of them, or do they face legal challenges in doing so?
Well, that's a good question because it is a bit more difficult with current leases. It's sort of like purchasing something, a contract, essentially. The government would have to buy back the leases. And that's the thing, is that they would have to then spend the money to repurchase and take the leases from the companies that have already paid for them. Now, that would cost money, of course. But in the end, you know, we have to ask ourselves, what is the cost of not taking back the leases and buying them back from the companies? The cost is increased climate change. The cost is increased degradation of our public lands. The cost is so much greater than sitting on them and saying, well, let's just let these leases run out.
I mean, and it seems as though considering the damage that the fossil fuel industry has done, the government at least has the moral, if not the legal right, to seize them back even without compensation. These are public lands.
I would be, I mean, personally, I'd be fine with that as well. I could imagine some court challenges, of course.
Sure.
I'm sure the fossil fuel industry would fight it tooth and nail. Even if they were proposing to buy them back, some of them would still say, no, we'd rather keep them. We could get more money from, you know, drilling them in the future. And many, many fossil fuel companies, you know, kind of hoard leases. They just kind of hold on to them as like just in case and don't actually explore them. And it's sort of a, it's unfortunate because we have put this as a priority of use for our public lands over just the natural enjoyment of them. And so I do think that he has a mandate, considering that we are in a climate emergency, to actually take that type of bold action. And as the executive, I mean, I believe he does have the jurisdiction to do so.
Then there's the issue of pipeline projects. You know, first, of course, one part of the fossil fuel industry is extracting the fuel. The other part is transporting it. And that has been deeply controversial, considering that as part of that transportation, there's inevitable pollution. We've seen major battles over huge pipeline projects. And the Keystone XL pipeline, which is a very important one, was one that Biden took immediate action and kept his campaign promise in canceling. First question is, how important was that cancellation? And second question is, will he cancel other projects? Projects like the Dakota Access Pipeline, for example.
So all of the above, yes. I think that, first of all, Keystone XL has been a fight for, you know, so many years, since 2008, that has represented exactly what's wrong with our current energy system, that we are still proposing to build any type of fossil fuel pipelines, but especially for tar sands, which is the dirtiest of all oil, right? And so I think that one thing it showed that he was serious about actually having a just transition. And personally, I've been working on Keystone for so many years that it finally feels like a sigh of relief. Now, obviously, that's the beginning, not the end. We still have Line 3, which is proposed, another tar sands pipeline, since we are still proposing those, as well as Dakota Access, which was already built. It's not a tar sands pipeline, it's a regular crude oil. But we have that is still a problem where it's actually in operation right now. And so we're pushing the Biden administration to also pull the federal permits for Dakota Access, which is currently operational. It has oil running through it, and to pull the federal permits for Line 3, which is a proposed tar sands pipeline, which is currently being built. And so for us, it's great that he did Keystone, and I'm very happy that he, you know, he reinstituted the same decision that his predecessor Barack Obama did when he was in office. But now I want to see him take that next step to stop both Line 3 and Dakota Access. And I believe that with enough public pressure and showing how important it is, I believe that he will.
And we saw the cancellation last year of the Atlantic Coast Pipeline, which was met with legal challenges. So it seems as though the activism around this issue has really been at the heart of why we're seeing climate justice now. Yes, Biden is doing the right thing, but he's doing it because of groups like yours, of activists like you, who for years have laid the groundwork, right? Tell me about the kind of grassroots pressure Biden has faced that you hope he'll continue to remain responsive to.
Absolutely. And I'm happy you mentioned the Atlantic Coast Pipeline. I used to work on that pipeline as well. Mm. It's just another example that organizing works. I think that, you know, when these pipeline fights first start, including Atlantic Coast Pipeline, which was a gas pipeline proposed that was going to end in North Carolina, run through the Appalachian Mountains, crisscross the Appalachian Trail, cut off the tops of Appalachian Mountains, which would be terrible. I think that what we're seeing is that organizing works and that elected officials can and will listen when you make them, when you push them to the point where there's no other option for them to choose than the right one. I think that what we're going to see in the near future, hopefully, is that this grassroots efforts, which have been happening across the country from individuals and organizations, also very much indigenous led for so many of these pipeline projects, is that we can't stop. The fossil fuel industry is on retreat. They are, you know, there was a report that came out recently about they're not even really going to be looking for new resources because the demand has gone down so much with the global pandemic. And so I think what it shows is that, you know, keep up the pressure. It might take 13 years like Keystone XL did. But in the end, the victory of keeping that oil, that gas, that coal, everything else in the ground is worth it.
Tell me about the other things that Biden can do besides what we've just been discussing. Your organization joined many other environmental groups in releasing an executive action blueprint for Biden under the banner of Build Back Fossil Free.
Build Back Fossil Free, yes.
Yeah, tell me about these actions, the other actions that he can take.
Oh, well, there's so many. I mean, mainly we're focusing on the infrastructure fights. We have a website of, you know, Build Back Fossil Free, which has the full list. So I won't dive into all of the lists, but mainly it's that we want to see him take the action of everything that he has control to do related to fossil fuels.
Without having to deal with congressional fights.
Because Congress, I think what we're all kind of coming to the conclusion of is that, you know, Congress can take a very long time. And even with the current split in the Senate, there's no telling how folks would vote. And so I think what we're pushing Biden to do, especially in his first 100 days, but continuing, is to everything from creating a climate test. One thing we want to see that we're really focusing on is the creation of a climate test for all agencies, as well as just all infrastructure projects. And there was actually a pretty close to this rule, similar rule that came out in the Obama administration in 2016, which was going to instruct all agencies to actually assess climate impacts when making decisions about moving forward with anything. And so we'd love to see that rule come back and be implemented. And we'd like to see it really applied so that climate change is actually seen at the forefront for any decision, so that when they're considering, do we build a pipeline of tar sands? The obvious answer can be no, because we actually are talking about the full cost of that project. So that would be our next big push, is after he, of course, rescinds the federal permits for both Line 3 and Dakota Access, we'd love to see an implementation of a thorough climate test for all future projects, so that we don't have to keep fighting one project after another after another. We can actually apply the same test to every project.
In his executive actions taken on Wednesday, Biden centered environmental justice. In his remarks, he said it was a part of delivering justice for communities who've been subjected to environmental harm. How significant is this? Have we had previous administrations center a demand that groups like yours have made for years, which is that we need to tackle environmental racism?
I am very, very, very happy that he didn't just do an executive action on, you know, on this issue, that he's actually talking about environmental justice. Environmental justice is something that has been, you know, at the forefront of organizing for a long time, in that it's not just about how many parts per million we are globally for carbon. It's about the impact that that carbon has on people's lives. It's about the impact that the pollution that has on people's lives, and environmental racism. And environmental racism, for anyone who's not as familiar with the term, is essentially, you know, the United States has systemic racism that has been here since its inception. And that plays out into every part of life, whether it's healthcare, jobs, and environment. And if you are either Black or Brown, you are much more likely to live near a hazardous waste site, near a coal plant, near pipelines, near all this infrastructure that has real life consequences for for you in terms of your health, your well-being, your environment. And so the fact that he says, you know, in one of his executive actions from this week, he's made it clear that he wants to establish a part of the Department of Justice that is the environmental justice branch of the Department of Justice. And that is amazing because environmental justice is a justice issue. And I think it's great that it's not just addressed within, of course, EPA, but it will also actually be focused on within the Justice Department as well.
Let's talk about the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, which under the Obama administration was transformed into a climate change fighting tool by attempting to see carbon dioxide and greenhouse gases as pollutants. And of course, the Trump administration promptly undid that. What is Biden promising specifically to do through the EPA?
Well, I know I have to read through all the executive actions from this past week to see which ones pertain explicitly to EPA. Mainly, he wants to reverse the damage that the Trump administration has done. The Trump administration has completely dismantled the EPA in every way that we can think of in order to try to make it as ineffective as possible. You know, one thing that the Obama administration did, which was we were very happy that he started, was the Clean Power Plan, which was the executive office's attempt to regulate carbon since Congress wouldn't. Now, the Clean Power Plan, you know, it didn't go far enough, right? We want it to be even stronger, but at least showed us that we had a president who was willing to actually do something and take this on. So I would expect the Biden administration to continue using, of course, the EPA to sort of reinstitute both the Clean Power Plan, but to go even further and to make sure that we do everything from, I would love to see, you know, raising CAFE standards, which are fuel efficiency standards for cars, which Trump was trying to attack. Strengthening the enforcement of NEPA, which is the National Environmental Policy Act, which is very much needed in order to review projects for their impacts, especially their impacts on communities, which is the focus of environmental justice. And so I see that for his EPA work, he's going to make sure that it goes back to, one, enforcing the law, which is important, but also going further than his predecessor, Obama, in making sure that it actually targets specifically related to environmental justice, since we all experience pollution, but we do not all experience pollution equally. And I think that that's going to be his focus, is to actually target in terms of reducing pollution in communities that are hardest hit.
There's also the response of the oil and gas industries themselves. Trump was so friendly to this industry, so clearly, you know, willing to bend over backwards for the oil and gas industry when the pandemic hit and they lost profits. He wanted to make sure that taxpayers would subsidize their loss of profits. How has the industry responded? I understand one of the things that they're already saying and doing is oil and gas prices will increase. They're jacking up prices, which is often, unfortunately, a political tool that the fossil fuel lobbyists use, and their, you know, the politicians they've bought and sold use to stave off any discussion around climate change.
You know, it's the same talking points that have been recycled for, the only thing the fossil fuel industry recycles are their talking points, unfortunately. you know, if they could actually care about the world, you know, we'd have a better place. I think that in the end, of course, the fossil fuel industry is going to fight it. I mean, that's what they do. This is their industry. They want to have the red carpet laid out for them, just like they had under the Trump administration. And you know what? It's a new administration. As people have said many times before, elections have consequences. And so, yes, of course, they're going to say, oh, but energy prices will rise. You know, I remember that they were upset that energy prices were so low because of the coronavirus pandemic, lowered demand so much that prices fell in the beginning parts of the pandemic to negative $30 a barrel. You know, their prices dropped so low that they were saying, we need help, we need help. Oil prices are too low. The government should help us. So if now their argument is saying, well, oil prices are going to increase, they should actually be happy because that's what they've been saying they needed. And in the end, oil prices are already pretty manipulated in terms of subsidies. Another thing that the president has said that he's going to do is to push to eliminate fossil fuel subsidies. And I'm sure they'll say the same things then, that it will increase oil prices. Oil prices have been pretty stable for quite some time in terms of, you know, gas at the pump and things like that. And all of these tactics are delay tactics. to keep the just transition that is inevitable from moving forward. But we have to have that.
I'm so glad you brought up the issue of oil and gas subsidies. I think the ordinary American does not have any idea that their tax dollars go literally towards subsidizing the oil and gas industry. We know now that a majority of Americans support strong action on climate change, which is such an important sea change in public opinion. They want a president, as polls have showed over and over again, they want leadership on climate. Even rank and file Republicans do. And yet we are, you know, this supposedly free market is giving subsidies, socialism for the oil and gas industries, giving our money to this industry. Does Biden need congressional approval to end these subsidies? How far can he go on this issue?
You know, that's a good question, because I saw when he was making his announcement about he's going to push for, I believe his statement was that he was going to push for Congress to end subsidies. We've had this debate internally too, is that does this require an actual law passed through Congress, or what can he do in terms of actually doing it through executive order? Overall, a lot of these subsidies are, you know, essentially tax law. And so he likely would need congressional approval to push things through to really end them, because it would be overtly changing, you know, tax laws.
But and so, perhaps just budget reconciliation rather than a veto.
Oh, yes. In terms of the legislative process, we would have to probably do it through budget reconciliation, because in the current form, you know, of course, we would have with the filibuster, we need 60 votes to pass anything unless we use budget reconciliation, which is a little bit of a kind of a complicated process. You can't do it for everything. You have to, it's only for certain types of legislation. You can do it for tax legislation. That is actually how the Republicans got their tax bill passed in December 2017, which also included opening up the Arctic Refuge for leasing. And so it has been used before. It's also how we got the Affordable Care Act in 2010, was through budget reconciliation. So there are some ways to do it without 60 votes. In the end, because it would be amending some tax laws, we would definitely, you know, we'd have to go through Congress. But he can still at least set the tone to say, here are my priorities, and this is what we need to do. And also in terms of subsidies, you know, we had the renewable tax credits expire for wind and solar at the end of 2020. They were only reissued for 5 years back in 2015 as part of a budget deal. And so these are all the things that he's going to have to really work closely with Congress to achieve. But considering the Republicans were able to pass their, $2 trillion tax cut for corporations and the richest people, I think that he can have the mandate to say, no, we actually need to cut working class families a break, middle class families a break, and stop giving their hard-earned tax dollars to multi-billion dollar corporations that clearly do not care about them, and to actually invest that in Americans.
And so finally, do you think that in order to actually, you know, keep climate change in check, does Biden have a plan to get us from where we are now to where we need to be in time, right? That's the multi-trillion dollar question, if you will.
That's the thing, you know, any plan, any political plan, any policy plan always has to be based in science. Science does not negotiate. Science does not compromise. Science is what it is. And I think that, you know, so far he's showing that he's ready. But in terms of, are we going to do enough as a country, even if he's pushing to make it in time, is really yet to be seen, because it's more than just what he can do as an individual. I think that even if he does everything that he can as a person to push for these policies, we still need Congress to act. We still need governors to act. So I think that, and we still need the whole world to act, not just the United States. You know, the U.S. is responsible for about 15% of the emissions worldwide, and we're around 5% of the world's population. So we're currently punching much higher than our weight. And so therefore, our responsibility to do more is even higher. But I do hope that if we stick to the science, which is why at 350, our name is 350.org, based off of 350 parts per million, which is the highest level of carbon dioxide in terms of a safe level for humans to live under. And the last time we were at 350 parts per million was in 1988, which is the year that James Hansen testified in Congress alerting the world to climate change. And so it's kind of ironic that we've wasted all this time because now we're at about 415 parts per million. So I think if we follow the science and he creates a plan based on that and the rest of the world too, then we can actually make it to stay below 1.5 degrees, which is the goal.
Well, Natalie, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Is 350.org the best website for more information?
Oh, absolutely. Definitely. And we have it's the easiest website to remember because it's just 350.org.
And I understand that the blueprint you put out for Biden is at buildbackfossilfree.org.
Yes. So we also have our coalition website, buildbackfossilfree.org, which has more of our overall demands as a community, environmental community for the Biden administration. And so definitely go to both websites, 350.org, as well as the buildbackfossilfree.org website. And it will show you ways that you can take action, get involved, and to make sure that this administration does everything that it can to really build back fossil free.
Thank you so much, Natalie, for joining us today. Appreciate your time.
Definitely. Thank you so much for having me.
My guest has been Natalie Mabain. She is the U.S. Policy Associate Director at 350.org. We've been discussing whether Joe Biden is going far enough to tackle climate change. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali. Thank you so much, Natalie. What a fantastic